The first case on the en banc oral argument calendar for this morning is case number 68450, Ramsey v. The City of North Las Vegas and others. Are counsel ready to proceed?
Bring me on behalf of Judge Ramsey. We're ready to proceed, Your Honor.
Okay.
Ross Miller, on behalf of the committee to recall Judge Ramsey, and we're also ready to proceed.
All right, Mr. Miller. Go ahead, Mr. Miller.
Justices, this is an unprecedented attack on judicial independence in the state of Nevada, for which I have no living precedents, nor can I find any historical precedents for. What has occurred here is a clever reading of an obsolete provision of the Nevada State Constitution has been used to attack and intimidate a municipal court judge who has done nothing other than execute her duties in accordance with law. This is inappropriate, it is unlawful, and we're asking the court to stop the recall election. Specifically, judicial independence is an essential element of our legal system. If the decisions of the court cannot be trusted to be the best considered judgment of a judge, then nothing else that this government can do will be respected or trusted by its citizens. Now, the Nevada State Constitution was framed in 1864. After much consideration, the only mechanism that was then in place to remove a judge was impeachment, modeled on the federal system, Article 7 of the State Constitution. According to the research paper I can find from Legislative Counsel Bureau, no judge in the state of Nevada has ever been impeached. In the 20s, the legislature then passed, in conformance with the national tide, a second system to recall all public officials. That a public official who was not implementing policies in accordance with the state's wishes could be recalled.
That's, Mr. Miller, yes, sir. You've gone on. I appreciate the background and the intro. And you've just touched upon probably one of the first issues that we need to look at. Pursuant to Article 2, Section 9, is a judge a public officer?
No, absolutely not.
What's your authority?
At the time that was enacted, what would be your reading of that?
At that time, in 1920 era, probably, the judges of the time might very well have considered them public officials. But you, this bench, has made that issue, settled it in the other direction. When the voters in the 70s and 80s got upset about term limits, they came up to this court that all judges, all public officials, are going to be subject to two terms. This court, sua sponte, split out that referendum into two questions.
They never declared that judges weren't public officials, though, did they?
Well, yes, sir, they did. And specifically, well, didn't it? Sorry, Justice. Sorry, do me interrupt. Yes, sir. Specifically and implicitly, they did. Number one, there is a section and a difference between Article 6 officers and Article 2 officers. A judge is almost politically impotent to defend herself against political attack. She cannot comment on policies. She cannot comment on opinions. A judge has to have additional protections. They are the most vulnerable of the elected officials in the state of Nevada. Now, whether we should elect judges or not, well, that train left the station in 1864, and that's not the issue here today. We do elect judges. So the question is how are they protected, and how can their judgment best be considered independent? The answer is, and it came to the voters in the 1970s, when they passed, not once but twice, the Judicial Disciplinary Committee. When it passed, it was considered opinion of Chief Justice Gunderson, writing to then-Governor O'Callaghan. And I wanted to quote this because this is what the gentleman at the time thought they had done. The purpose of SB 453, which is, as far as I can tell, was enacting legislation, is that justice and municipal court judges are not to be subject to the redundant disciplinary measures, but instead are governed by the code of judicial conduct prescribed by the Supreme Court. And it goes on, but that is the highlight here that underscores the thinking on this point. Conditional with the two passages of the Commission on Judicial Discipline, this state also enacted the Judicial Disciplinary Committee to enforce it. Then the enabling legislation by the legislature went on and is found at one point, NRS 14401, has exclusive jurisdiction to for removal of judges. When Judge Gary Davis got in trouble over in North Las Vegas, he challenged that commission's decision and his ability to challenge him. It went up to this court again, and the court once again said the Judicial Disciplinary Committee retains exclusive jurisdiction for the removal of judges. Now, a judge is a different type of official than an elected official. We had a big tax increase at the last legislature. That's a policy decision. People of good intent and goodwill can disagree, and my removal from an office where I form policy is a legitimate remedy in those instances. That's not a judge's job. A judge's job is to stand above the fray, aloof and impartial to the political winds, and to apply the law fairly and impartially. That is impossible, impossible, if a litigant can sit down and call a judge out a day after a bad judge a ruling and go hire a group of people to recall them. That is not a state that we want to be a part of, and that's not the way our legal system works. Now, we know that this provision has to be obsolete. We know because of several rules of statutory construction. Specifically, when you pray of a specific provision, it will prevail over a previous general provision. The Justice's earlier question was in the 20s. And yes, probably in the 20s, when Nevada had 200,000 people in it, they probably would have considered a judge. But that's not our state today. In our state, in my living memory, we've added 2 million people to the valley I grew up in. I played in the
farms. Constitutional text in Article 2, Section 9 did not change at any time from the time of its enactment to the present, correct?
No, it did not. However, what
you're saying that the addition of the Judicial Discipline Commission by implication changed that. So explain to me textually how the Constitution changed.
That particular provision didn't change. What changed was the addition of Article 6, Section 21. And with deference to my law professor, expressio unus est exclusio alterius.
I understand those canons, but let's start with the text on the Judicial Discipline Commission. Are you relying entirely on the reference to, in addition to impeachment, et cetera, there shall be this power in the Judicial Discipline Commission?
Yes, Judge. Justice. Yes, Justice. They specifically knew about that and left it out. That means that when they passed that by excluding what they knew to be an alternative, they clearly, as Justice Gunderson wrote to Governor O'Callaghan, meant for there to be two remedies. They left impeachment on the books. It was so obscure it's never been used. They left it alone. The recall of justices or judges was then removed in favor of this disciplinary committee. And if this background paper that I relied upon was well-researched, it appears that no one's...
But I'm more interested in the text before we get to the background papers. So your argument textually is that that clause, the reference, the cross-reference to impeachment, sub silentio, said, well, recall is off the table for judges, and we're saying public officials no longer includes judges.
That's correct.
That's your argument.
Yes, Judge.
Okay,
and specifically, I back that up with a proposition that the enabling legislation says so, that this court subsequently in the Davis decision says so. The court...
I'm not cross-examining. I just want to know what your position
so,
was.
I do this every day, Judge. Yeah. Normally it's a little less academic, a little more gritty, so I apologize. Specifically, the actions of this court itself clearly carved out different protection for judges, and that's appropriate. Because if I get in a dispute with a police officer, if I get in a dispute with a neighbor, I need to go to a judge who I know is going to do their level best to give me a fair hearing. That's their charge before law. If I'm in a fight with a guy who's got a lot of money, and he can look at that judge and say, maybe there's a recall coming, that is going to impugn the integrity of our legal system and damage it in ways that are incalculable.
Mr. Mayor, is that any different than what occurs on a daily basis when we have regular elections and people with a lot of money seem to call out judges these days?
Justice, what I would do, and I actually anticipated that question, and here's my answer, sir. The courts have said that when a lawyer puts down his practice and goes in to seek and serve the community as a judge, he has a property right in that position. He's given up something to go and serve the community, and he retains a property right in that job. Now, an election is the end of that contract. Then the voters get to decide afresh whether you're going to renew. That's a different proposition. But for that period of time, he's given up his...
But if I understood your original argument, you're going back to judicial independence. That is, the decision, you have the ability to make the decision that you think is right, irrespective of what others might think in recall or election.
Yes, sir. It is my concern here is that the, if this provision...
I guess, sum and substance, do voters have rights or don't they? And were they actually taken away, or can we read this so it's not different from the other provision? Are they in conflict, or can you read them and harmonize them?
I believe they are harmonized. I believe that has been the law of in Nevada and has been as long as I've been alive and been paying attention to public affairs. There has no judges have been recalled in my living memory. The research paper I can find.
If that was the case or wasn't, we would not be here considering the issue today. That is the issue of the moment.
True enough, Justice. Specifically, the problem is they are the ones attempting to disturb the status quo.
Now, Mr. Mueller, can I ask you one thing?
Oh, absolutely, Justice.
Time, because we're getting short on time. What about the issue Judge Ramsey was not able to participate in the signature verification process, and how would that impact the validity of the recall petition?
Certainly, Justice, when I read the scheme and I took it apart and tried to understand conceptually what they were thinking, it is very clear that a recall election, by its definition, is going to be a contentious issue. And the scheme is littered with shalls and musts. You shall do this, you must do that. Several of these particularly were not followed, and I believe specifically without them being followed, there was no jurisdiction to hear the matter in district court. Specifically, you find it's NRS 306-03-0030. The petitions have to be consecutively numbered. Now, it strikes me as at first I thought, well, that's kind of a niggling sort of thing to get upset about. But as I thought about it, that means you've got to come in and you file 30 or 40 or 500, and they have to be numbered so that everyone knows which documents you're talking about, so no one can add or take away documents when no one else is looking. That wasn't done here. Secondarily, it's a must statute, non-discretionary. The subject of the recall must be allowed to witness the recall election. We tried twice and were turned away both times, and that did not happen. Specifically, and particularly... Now, since I got a moment or two, I'll digress. The particularly troubling thing for me as a trial attorney was the fact that we put the city clerk in North Las Vegas on, and we questioned her, and I promise you I wasn't gentle. I mean, we went after her, and at the end of her examination, she could produce no evidence that she had actually put the judge on notice as when the signature is going to be recalled. Then at a subsequent session, she's recalled. She now has discovered a letter that could not have been delivered in time, and then she doesn't have to get back on the stand, but testifies from her office over my objection. And in the quiet privacy of her office, she has the city attorney of North Las Vegas sitting next to her. I once again objected. Judge Johnson said she's an officer of the court, and then we subsequently walk out of the courtroom and find out, as we were sitting there cross-examining the city clerk for her newly discovered evidence, the city attorney is sending out a campaign flyer to run against Judge Ramsey. I mean, the proceedings down below were so fatally flawed that if you don't want to get to these interesting constitutional issues, you don't need to. I believe you could find that the procedures are so flawed below that there's no jurisdiction and the recall should be dismissed.
Well, let's explore that a moment.
Certainly.
You've indicated that there may be a flaw in the verification process. And there does seem to be a hole in the statute about the type of notice required and who can attend and the like. But what's the remedy? It seems to me that's a completely separate question. Would this court, if it were to agree with your position that verification was required to be provided, notice of it, and participation was disallowed, require that the process begin anew, even with the collection of signatures, or does it require a retesting of the signatures that have been collected before any election recall takes place?
When the matter, when we had completed, I was convinced beyond any doubt and laid out for Judge Johnson my arguments that there was insufficient signatures. And I asked for a full recall, for recount, which I believe was well within his discretion. He declined to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, at this point, I believe the proper remedy is just dismiss the recall and send it back to square one.
Why? What would have changed? I saw what you requested in the district court, so I'm curious to know why that remedy would change from the district court to here when nothing else has happened.
Well, the answer was is additional research, Justice, and what I found was there's actually a crime on the books. Mm-hmm. It's found at NRS, and where is it? Sorry, my notes. It is found at 306.025. Makes it a misdemeanor to put false information on the case. One of the things I had wanted to explore very aggressively on behalf of Judge Ramsey was the fact that the allegations that were used to sign the petitions were actually falsified as statements of facts that were not true. That's actually a crime under Nevada law. Now, that's the why my remedy has changed, because I've had time, you know, in the crush of doing litigation, as I've had a chance to do some more research.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mueller. I'll give you
Chief, I have just a simple question,
all right,
if I may. Mr. Mueller, if we are not public officers, then what are we?
Article 6 officers subject to the Commission of Judicial Disciplinary Guide or Disciplinary Commission and as governed by and enacted by the Judicial Code of Ethics.
So none of the protections that would otherwise be extended to public officers would extend to us because of that characterization?
The protections, which specifically are you referring to, you certainly would have all protections, but the reality is a justice is not, or a judge is, or a municipal court judge is not a legislator. They have different functions and they have different protections. You can't do whatever you want as a judge. Even if you think the law is asinine, you must follow the law. You can say, oh, this is a dumb law, but here's what the guy said. Now, if you have to enforce an unpopular law against a popular defendant, his supporters become angry and come after you. They want to recall you. Well, you've just done what you're supposed to do. It's the legislature passed the bad law, not you. And that is why a justice and an elected judge has to have this protection. No other policy makes any sense.
Thank you, Mr. Mueller. Thank you, Chief.
All right. I'll give you 2.5 minutes for your rebuttal, and we'll give to the other side 17 and a half minutes. How do you wish to divide that time up, or do you wish to? Are you going to argue at all, Mr. Mueller?
Yes, Chief Justice. We will try to reserve 5 minutes for the city.
Okay. Then we'll let the city keep an eye on you.
Okay. Got it. May it please the court, Ross Miller on behalf of the committee to recall Judge Ramsey. There are two issues that are before this court. One is, can a municipal court judge be recalled under Article 2, Section 9 of the Constitution? And the other is, did the district court err in determining that we had substantially complied with the statutes and constitutional provisions relating to a recall petition? And I think both of those answers are abundantly clear. Turning first to the constitutional issue, which this court will review de novo, it is abundantly clear that a judge is a public officer and therefore subject to a recall. And you can look at any number of sources to make that determination. While this court has not directly confronted the issue as to whether or not judges are subject to recall, you have certainly considered on a number of instances what constitutes a public officer. And I would encourage you to look at those decisions. First, if you look at just the plain and unambiguous meaning of that provision, I think it was well understood to the voters in 1912 when this provision was put in there that clearly a judge would qualify as a public officer. If you look to the dictionary definition in Webster's, it says that a public officer is one who exercises a government function. And this court, although not directly confronting this issue, has addressed this issue in a number of cases, most specifically the Cole case, which went through a number of factors. If you look at the factors that was created in that case, this court has made it clear that a judge under any of those criteria would qualify. Additionally, in some more recent cases, the Halverson case, said, under the Nevada Constitution, a judge can be removed from office only by the voters of the recall, by the legislature as of 1976,
by the Nevada Commission on Judicial Discipline. Additionally, the Lau case seems to recognize that this court has previously inferred that judges can are public officers and therefore subject to recall. And in that case, it said all public officials, whether legislative, executive, or judicial, are subject to those provisions. And so I think it's very clear, looking at the precedent of this court, the plain and unambiguous language of that statute, that judges are subject to recall. This court does not need to look at the history of the recall provision as to when it went in, because the language is clear and unambiguous. But should the court want to look at that, there's very persuasive language in the history of when that was enacted. Recall came about through the Progressive Era, and there were a number of Western states that adopted this. And that was directly confronted as part of the policy debate at the time as to whether or not judges should be subject to recall. In fact, in some of those states that put in place a constitutional provision of recall, they specifically exempted judges from the recall process. Nevada chose not to. The Bar Association lobbied very heavily against it, conducted a vote in which the members of the bar voted overwhelmingly that judges should be exempt from recall. But despite that fact, they weren't, and this passed overwhelmingly. The suggestion from opposing counsel seems to rely almost exclusively on the question of whether or not the later provision adopted in 1976 dealing with the Judicial Discipline Commission creates a conflict that therefore either expressly or impliedly removed the ability to recall judges. And when looking at that, I think it's very clear that it certainly didn't happen expressly, that they could have done that by striking the provisions that were contained in Article 2, Section 9. Nor is it at all the case that they would have done that impliedly. It's certainly not what the public would have understood, is that there was an intent to give more power to the Commission on Judicial Discipline.
Is there any legislative history, Mr. Miller, that would indicate that the recall was replaced by the Judicial Commission on Discipline?
Absolutely none.
On judicial discipline?
Absolutely none, Justice. You can't find any precedent or historical reference to the fact that that's what was contemplated, is removing the provisions of recall. And what's inconsistent is that they have argued that because Article 6 talks specifically about in addition to the means for impeachment, this is the exclusive means. But that's simply not the case. And we know that by looking at the Article 6, Section 21, Subsection 8, which states, no justice or judge may by virtue of this section be removed. Well, if you were going to take their argument that somehow this provision impliedly removed the ability for the public to be able to recall judges, that provision, which said may by virtue of this section be removed, would be entirely superfluous, which goes against basic principles of constitutional interpretation. It would also mean that the public must have intended to remove the provisions to remove a judge through legislative resolution, which is found in Article 7, Section 3. And under Article 7, Section 3, it requires a completely different standard. It requires for impeachment that there be some malfeasance in office. In the case of impeachment, it requires that there be a misdemeanor that took place. The legislative resolution process.
Judges are still subject to impeachment, is that what you're saying?
I believe that's what they're arguing, and certainly we suggest that there are four means that a judge can be removed: through recall, through legislative resolution, through impeachment, and through the Judicial Discipline Commission. But in all of those other three instances, it requires misconduct of some type, and it lays out different standards. Recall is much more broader, and if you look at your decision in the Batchelor case, you speak to the importance of that all power within the government is derived exclusively from the people. And this court has expressed understandable reluctance, extreme reluctance, to interpret one constitutional provision over another, especially where it relates to something where the will of the people is clear. And the will of the people is clear in this instance. Certainly, if you wanted to give more authority to the independence of the judiciary, you could do things like elect judges, We have put that in front of the public any number of times, and they reject it. In 1912, when the recall first went into place, as I mentioned, there was a big debate as to whether or not we should exempt judges from recall. It's been clear through looking at the history of our state that the public wants to be able to elect their judges, and with that would come the power to be able to recall their judges as well. And that should be given great deference to this court. Turning to the substantial issues, the substantive issues raised as to whether or not the district court erred in reviewing whether or not we complied and the city clerk and the county officials complied throughout the verification process, the standard there is abuse of discretion.
Well, let's explore that for a moment with respect to notice to Judge Ramsey that the verification process was going to get underway and that she would have the opportunity to attend and witness that. I was put in mind, although nobody discusses it, of the Markham case where we have a statute that says the target of a grand jury proceeding is entitled to appear and testify. And at the time the statute was enacted, it didn't require notice. You know this, you worked in the district attorney's office. But then the Markham case said implicit in that statute is a requirement that the district attorney notify the defendant that the grand jury is convening and this defendant is a target of the proceeding so that the defendant can exercise that statutory right to appear. And that struck me as analogous here. We have a statute that says Judge Ramsey should be able to attend the verification process, and there's this issue in the briefs and sort of factual turmoil about who said what to whom when. But it's pretty clear nobody said at 9 a.m. on Friday, whatever the date was, we're going to do this and you have the opportunity to appear and witness this. You would agree with that, right?
Yes, Justice, I would agree.
You comment on the Markham analogy also in your answer.
Yes. Clearly there is no notice requirement, and that's our position. If the court were inclined to read in a provision requiring notice, the city clerk, along with the county clerk, the county registrar, rather, fully complied with that. They went above and beyond to notify Judge Ramsey that the verification process was going to begin. Shortly after we turned the signatures in, Ms. Andalina sent an email to Judge Ramsey indicating her that she was going to turn in the signatures to the county clerk and the process was going to begin. Her representative, Johnny Jackson, was present when we held both the press conference and when we turned in the signatures.
Did anyone tell her what time and where this verification process was going to commence?
I don't believe the record is clear as to whether or not they told her directly as to what time. However, Johnny
and
Jackson.
And where?
I'm sorry?
And where?
That may have not been clear in the record as well. But what we do have is a clear notice that was given to them. Johnny Jackson was present at that time. He testified that he fully understood that there were strict time constraints that applied here and that it needed to be done very quickly. He simply showed up late. He showed up despite the fact he knew of those time constraints. He didn't show up until late that afternoon on Friday, and most of the process had been completed. He went to the wrong location.
Mr. Miller, let's back up. You said he showed up on Friday. That was a secondary proceeding. There was a proceeding before that where they actually drew the names and ran the names to the system, which to my understanding he had no notice of. And then the second day where you says he was late, again he has, based upon the record that we have in front of us, neither side said that notice a specific time and place, because we have this dichotomy between actions of North Las Vegas morphing in to actions of the county clerk for verification.
And I believe what the record shows is that Mr. Jackson believed that only the raw count was going to be completed. In fact, this was a small petition, relatively few number of signatures. The clerks are very efficient. They proceeded with the raw count, got it done very quickly. And so they, after having met that initial requirement, moved on.
Who else was there when they did the count on the Friday?
The representatives of the county registrar's office, who have been doing this for any number of years.
Was there anyone else there?
I don't think there's anything in the record to suggest that there was any other member of the public there.
Okay, so the petitioners didn't get notice either, the people who were behind the petition drive?
We certainly understood that they were going to begin the next day. That was clear to everyone there, that we were under very strict time constraints.
No, my question was different. I'm sorry. The representatives of the people who gathered the signatures, were they there when the beginning of the verification process started?
We did not appear.
Okay, thank you. Which
we have testimony in the record suggesting that's not unusual, that even sometimes a target of a recall effort does not appear to watch the process. But I guess what I would like to emphasize on that point is that even if this court were to find and read in a specific notice provision relying perhaps on the Markham case, and that the government did not meet its obligation in that regard, this was cured by the fact that they were given notice that we were going to have the exact same process on Monday. And the county registrar...
Was it exactly the same? My understanding is that the way it works, you have a petition that has 3,000 signatures. Let's make it easy. Yes. And you're going to pick some random selection percentage of a number of those to get to 500 or some percentage so you can verify statistical probabilities that some number are flawed and will need to be rejected. That selection process was not repeated on the Monday recount or verification that Judge Ramsey's people attended, right?
This is true. They enter in manually all the names on the petition into a computer database, and they have a vendor that is a computerized program that randomly selects which names would be sampled.
Is the data entry considered part of the random verification?
No, the data entry is simply to convert it into a format.
Okay.
Off of those paper petitions.
And is that part of what's witnessed, would be witnessed under your view of that statute or not?
I believe the testimony was that there's not much to witness there because it's just a computer program that's going to generate those names.
Well, but if they threw out everyone that looked funky, you would alter the process, right?
Well, if there were clear abuse to that regard where, you know, they did not enter those names in, then, you know, clearly. But,
okay.
But the problem in this record, Mr. Miller, is that when Mr. Mueller wanted to test this question in front of the district court, it didn't get vetted, which raises the issue I raised earlier about remedy. But in fairness to you and your clients, you didn't control this process. If there was a flaw in the process, it had nothing to do with you and your clients, so maybe in the interest of the time remaining, we ought to let the city comment on this rather than having you defend the city's process.
Yes, thank you, Justice.
Okay.
Thank you, Chief Justice.
You don't mind my interrupting you, do you, Mr. Miller?
No, it's okay. May it please support Pat Byrne on behalf of the city of North Las Vegas.
And by posing my question, I don't mean to assume that the city did anything incorrect either, but I think it's more important since there was a point at which the city had the signatures presented to it that it was faced with how do you deal with some statutes that might have some ambiguities in it, in fairness to everybody. Not all of our statutes are crystal clear, so let's talk about what the city did do and then determine whether or not it satisfies the requirements for a petition if the court agrees that this officer is one that can be recalled.
And thank you, Chief Justice. It's... The city is here because we're named as a party because we run the recall election kind of after the process is completed. In fairness, I think some of the criticisms are really going to a party that's not here, the county, who is the party who actually oversees the process. The city takes the petition, and here the city clerk took the petition. 9 minutes after taking the petition, the city sent an email out to Judge Ramsey advising her that this process is starting. Judge Ramsey's representative, Johnny Jackson, testified as a veteran of the process. He knew it would move very quickly. He reaches out the next day in the afternoon, and they've already completed the process.
But he reaches out to whom the next day? The county?
The county,
and
which
the
is where he should reach
here.
Out. Now, my client, interestingly enough, is off. It's Friday. They're taking that day off as their 4-day work week.
And so my client doesn't know what's going on in terms of what's going on at the county. However, she does advise them through email and a separate letter that this process is moving and they know it's going to move quickly through Johnny Jackson. He calls, he should have called that day, but he calls the next day. Now, to answer your questions, Justice Pickering, this is a little different than Markham. We have the same statute in terms of there's nothing here about notice being required. It's that you can, you're allowed to witness the process. But in Markham, we're dealing with persons.
Let me ask you this, and I hate to interrupt you. If notice is required, but you're not giving the time and place, is that a due process issue that we should consider?
Well, Justice Peregrine, I think you skipped the first question by assuming is notice required, because I don't believe it is.
Well, and if you're looking at the statute and you're looking at NRS 293.12778, clearly, I read that plain language is notice is required.
Because otherwise you would not be able to participate in the process.
Correct.
And fair enough. And I think that goes to
Yeah, it's the Markham analogy.
And in Markham, though, we're dealing with a person who's been indicted who may not understand the process. And here we're dealing with a public officer who fully understands the process. They have representatives. They're reading the statutes. And they understand it's going to move quickly. So to the extent notice was required here, we believe it was cured, Justice Berger, by the actual notice that was provided. And then the participation in the actual second day, which was a repeat. Now, they didn't redraw the names, but there's nothing to that. That's a computer process.
But the entry of the names, is that part of this verification process?
And the statute doesn't specify.
Yeah, it's a difficult statute. It really is.
It is. I think that the part that's material that really where somebody's going to want to witness is the verification itself. They're back-checking the names with the requirements of the statute. But Justice Pickering, there's no clarification.
But that's what happened on Friday, right? Yeah.
And that was not repeated because then you'd have different names. So they did an exact redo the second day.
There's going to be some problem, assuming there even is any, to the point that Mr. Mueller is raising about the authenticity of some of these signatures. It's going to be in the process that occurred Friday morning, right?
Well,
that forms the basis. The verification that took place on, or ratification that took place on Monday.
The only thing they missed on Monday was the inputting of the names in the computer program pulling the numbers. The actual checking with all of the complaints that Mr. Mueller is now raising was done again verbatim the second day on Monday. So that process was repeated. And before I sit down, Chief Justice, I want to address your question.
Where in the record is that?
The testimony of, and I forget the county representative, said that the process was an exact duplicate.
The first day seemed to be about 5.5 hours, and the second day was about 1.5. That's not verbatim.
Well, in terms of the signature verification portion, Your Honor, but fair enough. Chief Justice, you raised the question about remedy, mm-hmm. And it's a fair question. We believe that there would have to be a showing of prejudice in order for us to go through and do what they've already done again.
Takes me to the record. Is it the case that Mr. Mueller said to Judge Johnson, I want to bring some witnesses in here to show that some of the signatures on the recall petition are not valid or should not have been considered? And then Judge Johnson didn't allow that. Supposedly. Is that the case? And if it is the case, then should this subject be either remanded to the judge if we were to conclude that the subject of the recall petition was denied access to view this process?
In terms of what it was specifically request, I don't recall. What I do recall thinking at the time and being surprised is there was no offer of proof made. No specific offer of proof where Mr. Mueller went up and said, we would have called the following people, we believe the evidence would have shown. And that's part of the reason why you're struggling with the record, is because it's not part of the record. It was not preserved by Mr. Mueller. We believe, though, the remedy is, if there's prejudice, you would send it back. This process has been stayed. There would be no reason to start over, as Mr. Mueller suggested, because all the deadlines are still told because the process has been stayed. So we would simply go back to redo the process if this court were so inclined. But we believe you don't have to here.
So in other words, the remedy would be to extend to Judge Ramsey and her representatives what NRS 293.1277 subsection 8 allows, which is to witness the verification of the signatures on the petition as she currently exists.
That is correct, Justice Pickering. We believe, but we would argue that you'd have to have showing a prejudice first, and we believe because it was cured through the second day, that would simply be substance over form over substance. But again, if the court is so inclined, the remedy would be to send it back to make sure the statute's fully complied with, as this court views the statute's obligations, if notice is specifically required and participating for the entire process is specifically required, you'd send it back for that purpose.
Okay. And unless there's any specific other questions for counsel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Mueller?
Thank you, Justice. Just a few points in rejoinder to my learned colleagues.
Substantial compliance is not a doctrine available here. This isn't a contract dispute between two businessmen regularly doing business. This is a recall. This is the first in my lifetime and probably the last. This is statutes that need to be followed strictly. No substantial compliance. The public has to have confidence in these decisions. My colleague here helped draft some of these regulations. He's now asking you to not really pay close attention to it. And it's not right. This is a strict compliance statute. Specifically, I found several of these petitions, one of which particularly comes to mind, that had one signature was repeated five times. Now, that signature
was repeated. Where in the record is that, Mr. Mueller?
I believe it was on petition page 127. It was petition number 127. There was one signature showed up five times, and I went through with Mr. Gloria and brought it out. Now, the fatal flaw in the methodology was that they took this raw number, and then they multiplied by that. Had they gone through and weeded out the obvious duplicates and then done the multiplication, there was not enough signatures. Now, had we been there and had we been observing and had we been given the opportunity afforded under your analogy, Justice, then that would have been uncovered. Had it been insufficient, they still had another 10 days to go gather more signatures. But they didn't. Mr. Jackson went down the very first day and was turned away. That was his testimony in the record because they wanted a letter from him saying that he was, in fact, his representative. Mr. Miller tells you that that's a fact now, but at the time, they wouldn't let him go in there until they had a letter from Judge Ramsey that he was there on their behalf. Now, my colleagues in their arguments...
So other than the identification of the person who signed five times, was there any other offer of proof that you made concerning defects in the petition?
Yes, sir. There were several discussions. There was particular problems with the numbering. We were having trouble finding or tracking the numbers of the petitions. And there was several times in those records where the clerk or the people who were reviewing these records were trying to decipher people's handwriting and going and looking at who's registered to vote at that house and giving them credit for the signature even when they didn't match. And that's also in the record. Now, this reason that her notice was unfair is we could have brought this up, and we tried to bring it up at district court. We were not allowed to. Now, my colleagues seem to miss the bigger picture here. It's a matter of policy decision, Justices. This decision will outlast all of us. I'm reading letters from Chief Justice Gunderson to Michael Callahan. Now, that's the arguments and the rationale. The decision here is important to Judge Ramsey in this case, but it is of paramount importance going forward. We will allow judges to be recalled for no particularly good reason, and I submit the answer is no.
Well, you've mentioned this a couple of times, and I'm curious to know where in the rubric of constitutional construction does one find a rule that says that the Supreme Court gets to assess whether this is good practice or bad practice. I don't think there is such a rule of construction, Mr. Mueller. I think we focus on the question of whether the constitutional provision was, as you suggested, modified in 1972 or 3 when those provisions were changed.
Yes, sir.
Absent that, your papers seem to concede that in 1912, when this originally came into being, judicial officers were covered under the public officer definition.
Yes, sir.
Don't you?
Yes, sir. And clearly without the subsequent...
So while this argument about judges need protection and the like, where can you give me a case where we would point to this policy decision and side this case on a policy ground, whether we think it's good policy or bad policy?
Yes, sir. When Gary Davis got into trouble in North Las Vegas, this court said it was exclusive jurisdiction for removal of judges was the purview of the Judicial Ethics Committee.
That was for misconduct, though, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. The problem with that analogy, Justice, is this. A judge doesn't get to determine, as he eloquently reminded me, what they want the law to be. They've got to follow law the way it is.
They want to recall a judge where the conduct doesn't rise to the level of misconduct.
That's not available in Nevada.
The interesting point about this case is that judges, unlike many public officers, may, as Mr. Miller has argued, be subject to removal or recall or impeachment or any number of circumstances which take them out of office, unlike many public officers.
I do not believe that's the way you should read it. I believe that would be a mistake.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Mueller? All right, then we thank counsel for their arguments here today. The court expresses its appreciation to counsel for their arguments and for the briefing, and this matter will stand submitted.